On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Today is a deeply important one for one of the world's largest nations, as more than 1.2 billion Indians celebrate their Independence Day. On the 15th of August 1947, India achieved its independence from the United Kingdom, and remarkably, just 1 year later, the country was part of Eamon de Valera's unprecedented worldwide speaking tour against partition. Having just lost political power at home, de Valera embarked on a tour that brought him through the United States, Australia, New Zealand and India, reigniting his political star power on the world stage, or at least in parts of the world that we're still interested in. To discuss, Donald Fallon is here for another edition of Hidden Histories. Donald, good morning.
Good to be here. 1.2 billion people, by the way. I had to fact check that a few times. That is absolutely extraordinary.
It's kind of remarkable. You think of the United States and China as these two biggest countries, but for population, India is huge. And I was thinking about this during the Olympics. It's kind of a wonder they don't win more Olympic medals if we can, a small, tiny little backwater country that we are. But anyway, that's another Hidden Histories day, how the Indians get on in sport. But let's talk about Dev. Many people felt, and this is kind of reminiscent of politics today, that before 1948, Fianna Fáil would never lose power. But that wasn't to be ultimately.
Yeah, I find this story of De Valera's global tour across continents really, really interesting. But I mean, the background of it is, why did he have the time to do it? And the reason he had the time to do it is they were out of power, Fianna Fáil. And I think everyone thought when Fianna Fáil came into power in 1932, they held it for 16 years. Which is a long, long time. Mm. You know the old cliche, a week is a long time in politics. 16
years. Is a very long
centuries,
time.
Centuries in politics. And when Fianna Fáil lost that election, they lost it in a way that sounds kind of familiar, actually, from our own most recent election here. They won more seats than any other party, 69 in total, over 40% of the vote. But they didn't have the numbers to form a coalition. So that paved the way for the first coalition government in the state. And it's a real seismic shift moment. You know, there's a new doll, there's new younger faces, people like Noel Brown. And De Valera and the like, Fianna Fáil, are kind of in trouble. It's a moment of identity crisis. So when you lose power, the question befalls all political leaders, even today. You know, what do you do? What now? Do I form the largest opposition bloc in the history of the state? That's one thing Dev could have done, and be a thorn in the side of the new government. And no, you know, what Dev does essentially is he embarks on this incredible world tour. And one of the new kids on the block, Sean McBride, Clan Publicta, said, Fianna Fáil have no plan to end partition. So what does Dev do? He embarks on a global speaking tour, unlike anything ever done before, to build international support for that very mission, to end partition in Ireland.
It does seem a remarkable response to lose power at home domestically and then respond to that by going internationally. But Dev's on the world stage was actually quite comfortable.
Absolutely. And it's a power move, really, isn't it? To say, you know, I may be out of power, but I am still the Irish international statesman. I'm the one they know, you know, across all continents. And De Valera, you know, is at his core an international statesman. He's much better, actually, at politics, I think, on that stage than he is at home. During the War of Independence, he was in America. He went to Fenway Park, Madison Square Gardens, the Washington Memorial, Native American reservations. I mean, there wasn't a group of people in America who De Valera didn't speak to in 1919, 1920. So he's good at this. He's comfortable at this. These large audiences on the world stage. And yeah, look, a global speaking tour, it's definitely one response to losing an election at home. So the Longfellow embarks on this journey from New York to New Delhi, Australia, New Zealand as well. Absolutely extraordinary. We're talking 50,000 miles. And of course, with today being Independence Day, one of those places he went, I suppose it's fitting to look back on that world tour.
At a time, obviously, when it wasn't as easy for them to go internationally as well. This would have taken a very, very long time. But I suppose we need to put it into the context. Ireland is this fledgling state really at the time, and probably a good bit of this was trying to put us on the world map.
Yeah, he's kind of deeply conscious of how Ireland's case is presented on the world stage. So what do other nations think of us and our arguments? But he also wants Ireland to be seen, I suppose, as an important voice in the world, even though it's a small nation, an important voice. And he kind of wins big international respect and praise for some of the comments he makes on the global issues of the day. So Mussolini invades Ethiopia in the 1930s. Most of the world just goes, you know, nothing to do with us. And De Valera at the League of Nations actually, you know, makes a very, very good point. He says, is there any small nation represented here who doesn't feel the truth of the warning that what is Ethiopia's fate today may well be its own fate tomorrow, should the greed or the ambition of some powerful neighbour prompt its destruction? You read between the lines there, he's kind of talking about Ireland and Britain as well, but he's really making the point on the world stage that, you know, Ireland is a friend of other small nations. But big nations, America, Australia, New Zealand, India, they don't need Ireland defending their interests. What they are, they're a podium. You know, they're the back of a truck that you can go and perform on. And that's what De Valera wants to do here. And with that in mind, off he goes, along with Frank Aiken, for this great four-nation speaking tour. And when you look at the pictures of him heading off from Shannon Airport, there's hundreds of kind of Fianna Fáil supporters waving him off. The dev of 1948 is not the dev of 1919. This is 30 years removed. You know, he's aged. The world has changed. But his career is so long. I mean, when you look at the footage of John F. Kennedy driving through the streets of Dublin, Dev is beside him. That's in the 60s. Like, Dev is around for a long time. But at the age of starting to show, even as early as 48, it's an elder statesman of a kind being waved off on this global tour. And then the international press don't really know what to make of this, because this isn't a Taoiseach. You know, this is a guy who's out of power. It's a revolutionary opposition leader. So how are you meant to cover this story? How are you meant to write about this guy?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You wonder, like, what would the reaction be if Mary Lou McDonald, for example, did the same thing now? And in many ways she does when she does the American tours around St. Patrick's Day. But you mentioned there the differences, Devin, in 1919. What were the differences when he ended up back in the city of his birth?
Yeah, he arrives in New York, which is a masterstroke, because they love him in New York, because he's a New York boy in some ways. It may have, some say, I don't think it did, some say it may have saved his life in 1916. But there's big media interest in Dev in New York. There was always going to be, but it's still nothing compared to what there was in 1919, you know, when he's speaking in like Madison Square Gardens as a young kind of revolutionary leader in exile. But the American papers are great on New York. I mean, he's driven through the streets with the governor of New York City, who says that Eamon de Valera is the boy from Manhattan who made good in Ireland. He's actually from Brooklyn, but whatever. But over 3 weeks, he goes to Boston, Chicago, Detroit, LA, Oklahoma, San Francisco, Philadelphia. This is an incredible journey for any politician to embark on. And in Boston, at least 250,000 people come out to see Dev and Aiken in the city. So, I mean, there are still great moments like that. There are still moments of star power, if you will, but nothing compared to 30 years earlier. And really, it's the big story on page 3 of most American newspapers. Whereas in 1919, Dev was front page news.
Right, okay. So he'd already taken that bit of a step back, and it's interesting to see. I'm always fascinated by when you see the likes of Dev or Michael Collins or any of them, the crowds they used to draw and the parallels today, where, you know, if you got 50 people at an event, you'd be doing well sort of thing for any politician. But you can see it fading in other countries. How did the likes of the Australians, the New Zealands on the latter end of this tour, how did they react to him?
I think Dev had a romantic idea about the Irish abroad, that there was an enormous Irish diaspora in the four corners of the world, and, you know, where the message of Ireland went, they would come out to hear it. But actually in Australia, it's really, really lackluster. And one historian goes as far as to say the Australian tour was not a success. It and its aftermath proved conclusively that Irish Australia was at an end, and that Australians of Irish descent could not be roused to any interest whatever in the affairs of Ireland. It was really, really odd, because I think Irish identity in those places, Australia, New Zealand, it had just kind of been submerged into something broader. You know, they had gone to Australia and become Australians,
right,
in a sense that they went to Boston and became Irish Americans.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that same great interest in even Dev in Australia and New Zealand. So, yeah, it was a bit lackluster, to be honest, when it came to Australia and New Zealand. And it probably showed that people drift in time. You know, people's identities change. Compared to Britain, we were still pumping immigrants into Britain in a big way in the 40s, you know, Irish-born people. First generation still living there. Australia and New Zealand, that connection had waned a little bit, and Dev, it goes down like a lead balloon.
What then about when he got to the likes of Calcutta? Because of all the places you've said, the Irish diaspora in Calcutta wouldn't be the biggest.
That's what's great about this. I mean, the great reception for Dev comes from the country on the tour with no Irish diaspora, but the one he feels a great kind of emotional connection to, which is India. He arrives in Calcutta on the 14th of June. Like, imagine you've just had a pretty bad go of it in Sydney and Melbourne, and you arrive in Calcutta. And the turnout is absolutely incredible. India had just received its own independence, so there was probably the euphoria of that moment in time. But there wasn't a door in India that didn't open to Dev and Frank Aiken. And really strangely, one of the people they meet, they have lunch with the last British Governor General of India, packing his bags, preparing to go, Louis Mountbatten, Lord Mountbatten.
No way.
Who later, of course, dies such a tragic death in Ireland. But it's amazing to imagine Mountbatten, you know, the outgoing symbol of British rule in India, and De Valera, a man who played no small role in bringing down the British Empire as we understood it at that time, sitting down to a cup of tea. Isn't it just absolutely
extraordinary? Yeah,
I wonder what they talked about. But, you know, people always talk about Dev's greatest moment being the radio speech he gives after World War II, where he attacks Winston Churchill. But the radio address that most people would have heard Dev give with their own ears, he delivers one on Indian national radio. So there must have been millions upon millions upon millions of people listening to this. And he says, for more than 30 years, many of us in Ireland have followed with deepest sympathy the fortunes of the people of India in your efforts to secure freedom. We regarded the people of India as co-workers and allies in a common cause, and we rejoiced exceedingly when India's right to independence was fully acknowledged. So this was a home match for De Valera. He was speaking to an audience who really, really adored him. And it's funny that the place with no history of Irish migration, it's India, that delivers the most rousing of all receptions.
Yeah, that's remarkable. So what did the tour actually achieve for him in the end, or did it achieve anything for him?
Did it make De Valera a relevant figure on the global stage again, perhaps? I mean, that's the great question. Did it achieve anything at all? Definitely it propelled him back to some kind of international importance. And it's interesting to look at the British archives and see, you know, where the British worried about De Valera going around the world talking to people. And they really didn't care that he was in America or he was in Australia. They were like, oh, let him speak to his heart's content about whatever he wants. But they were actually quite worried about him in India and the influence that he could have on that part of the world. So what De Valera couldn't have anticipated was that while he was going around the world talking about the need to end partition, the government of the day at home were moving towards passing the Republic of Ireland Act, which, you know, ultimately made us a republic in the following year. And Dev said in the Dáil about that act that we're merely giving to a name to what already exists, a republican state. So while Dev is going around the world talking about the need to abolish partition, it's the coalition government at home who ultimately bring about a republic as we know it in the following year. I think Dev would have been sickened on some level that had happened, you know, not under Fianna Fáil power.
Yeah, fascinating kind of demarcation of the power. So you've already kind of touched on it, but of course that was no way near the end. Excuse me, the end of Dev's career, even though he was well on.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a great life if that was, you know, if Dev died in the 50s? Like, that would be a great long life in politics. You would have had a guy who was, you know, a revolutionary soldier in Boland's Mills, president of an underground illegal parliament, the Dáil, international statesman, Taoiseach, world tour speaker. But it wasn't. You know, he's back in power in 51, out in 54, back in 57, president in 59. I mean, not even Charles de Gaulle could match the extraordinary ability of Dev to just stick around. And they talk about, you know, Haughey's nickname was the Great Houdini in Irish politics because he could get himself out of any mess. But Dev could just stick around. He was there for so, so long. And when he eventually does die in the 70s in India, they never forgot that visit in 48. The front page of one of India's national papers, Eamon de Valera, the last of a historic, heroic generation. So an incredible life, de Valera, absolutely extraordinary. From the days of fighting in Boland's Mills to driving around beside JFK, no one lived a life quite like it.
Yeah, whatever you think of him, no denying his historical impact really is there. Donal Fallon, listen, that was an absolutely fascinating edition of Hidden Histories. Thanks for joining as well. That was Donal Fallon, author of the Come Here to Me Boggs and the host of the Three Castles Burning podcast.
On the Record with Gavin Riley
on News Talk